Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Our next guest is going to be joining us very shortly, just to some of your comments here. And hi there. If the council had gritted the Mongorry Road, there'd be nobody out in quads. People on this road can't get out. What are we paying tax for? And I think really it was kind of like the... I think it was more the behaviour of the person who was riding the quad more than anything. A song like Beidin Aile Mi should be released, recorded in honour of Dr. McGinley, a song which is about Tory in Gola Island. Gola Island is across from Derrybeg, where Dr. McGinley grew up. Thank you for that. The Thorn Road in Letterkenny has had its traffic added to hugely because of the clubs and businesses. It's a minor road with a steep dip and no one exiting the club stops because it's so difficult to get off again. People are always rushing to games or training. No consideration is given to walkers or residents on the road. I'd gladly welcome a reduction in the speed on roads, says a listener. Right, okay, let us see. We were talking about some embarrassing situations and also some embarrassing situations, and I'm promising to rid you of the embarrassment here, and also some issues as it relates to housework and what you do and don't like. Hiya, Greg. Yes, it sucks when that happens. Not socks, socks. Why not use a laundry bag for separate stuff and you won't put a foot wrong, as you'd need some heavy socks for the snow that arrived last night, late post, as just when I thought when I heard in the forecast for all counties in the Republic of Ireland apart from Donegal. I don't mind the forgotten field this time. That comes in from Kevin in Dunlow. Now there's snow. Hello, I remember my husband went to a wake one time, opened the front door, went on through to the kitchen and met a woman and said, "Oh, I'm sorry for the loss of your mother. I only met her yesterday. Is this not such a name? Is this not such and such's name?" She says, "Oh, you're looking for that house up that road." I still take it out on him from this to this very day, Greg. He's a man that never gets anything wrong. Well, isn't it good that you've got that on him anyway? I'd have to get clearance for a couple of the stories. That I have at the moment. But I do have one of my father, sadly passed, who did attend a wake. He would have had quite a loud voice. And he thought that someone that he'd would have met in the pub now and again had passed away and went into the wake and did say rather loudly, it has to be said, at the side of the coffin, "That's not him." But the subtlety perhaps wasn't there. But he was glad that his friend hadn't passed. Hi, Greg. Happy New Year to all at Highland Radio. I'm single and I live with my elderly mother. One day I took ill in the bathroom and passed out. My mother panicked when she found me. She called my sister and then asked, had she called an ambulance by my sister? Her answer was yes, the paramilitaries, not the paramedics, are on the way. Paul Blaney, Dan Patrick. Also, she once sold my dad's car for him while he was up there in Donegal on holiday. When the person on the phone asked if the car was in good condition, she said, "Oh yes, it's in immaculate conception." They both roared with laughter. So she's calling paramedics, paramilitaries, and condition conception. It's immaculate conception. Keep them coming in for us. A caller says, "We are definitely the forgotten county. There has not been one reporter on RTE reporting the weather up here. They've showed weather updates from the rest of the country, so why not let people know what's happening in the county of Donegal?" Well, that's what we're here for you. Barra Best, BBC weatherman, posted Castle Derg, second coldest in Ireland last night at -7, as it's on the Donegal border. Very strange, Donegal got a yellow warning. Another, "I enjoy doing housework and listening to Highland Radio. This makes me laugh out loud now. A local man had the same jacket as my husband and I almost cuddled up to him in the town. Stay safe." Okay, embarrassing moments, cuddling up to a stranger. He probably would have been delighted. Re-embarrassing moments. "I came out of the GP's one day and the car wouldn't start. I thought nothing of it because I was going down the hill and I thought I'd kickstart it on the hill, only to discover I was in the wrong car." Talk about being embarrassed and the owner standing laughing, wondering how far I would get. Keep your embarrassing stories coming into us. Absolutely loving those. And there's lots of other stuff on other matters as well. Okay, we'll take a break and our next guest joins us after these.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Some of your comments here. "Good morning. The need to cut the speed on cars and put a speed limiter on all cars to do 100 kilometres per hour. Hi, can you highlight this? My car failed its NCT in December and needed a retest, which I was told at the time would be €28. I went to book it yesterday and the fee has increased to €40 to retest, an increase of 42%. The initial test has been increased by 10% to €60. Why such an increase in retest cost? Can you find out? Thanks. Well, the problem is that the RSA's broke, I think, and maybe that's the reason if the money indeed goes in that direction. Right, now, I 100% agree with Kevin on speed, says a listener there. Letterkenny to Fannad is an 80-kilometre road which is poorly highlighted and many drivers breach the limit on this road. Better signage needed. Another, there's a narrow border road in Inishowen where the speed limit changes from 80 kilometres per hour to 50 kilometres per hour to 30 kilometres per hour to 50 kilometres per hour once you cross the border into the north, as it is a local road. Changing the speed limit on this side of the border to 60 kilometres to 40 miles per hour makes sense and will be very, very welcome indeed. Right, okay. As you would know, we're always well represented at the BT Young Scientist Exhibition, and our focus today is going to be in the Abbey, at the Abbey Vocational School. They've got four projects in total: a wearable cap size alert system by Harry Davies, menopause, how much do you know, by Isla Buchanan, an investigation into the initial success of the new deposit return scheme, why are 25% of people still not using it, and also an investigation into skin microbiomes of people who identify as highly attractive and bitten by mosquitoes and poorly attractive and not bitten by mosquitoes. I will just point out at this point, because I think it's important information, I have never been bitten by a mosquito. So I can, obviously, as a highly attractive person, that makes sense. All right, the guests are walking around all over the place. Do I go to them? I don't know. Can you stop walking for a second so I can speak to you? Right, I'll cross over to them in a moment, but I'll just go to another couple of comments. Greg, I was just about to text about barking dogs outside at night when the subject came up. This is so common. You can fill in a complaint form to the council, but only if you've informed the owner first. How popular will you be with the neighbour and their friends and their relatives? Okay, I think I can say good morning now to students Ryan McCallig, Keevan Craddock and Oisin Kerrigan. Are you there, gentlemen? No, we're going to be saying hello to them shortly. All right, who's this? Is this Keevan, is it?
Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. The sound isn't fantastic, but I still want to find out what you are doing down at the BT Young Scientist.
So our project is an investigation into the initial success of the new deposit return scheme and why are 25% of people still not using it.
And have you had any findings so far? So what's contained within within this project? Why are a quarter of us not still using it or still not using it?
So the reason why a quarter of the people are still not using it is because the problems with the machines.
So they're frustrated and they go, stuff it, I'm not going to.
Yes, because they often spit out the bottles.
So that's interesting. So it's not necessarily public attitude. People are interested, but they're just frustrated at the interaction with the machines. Now, who is working with you? No, it's okay. It's okay. Who's working with you on this project?
I can't hear you, sorry.
No problem whatsoever. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
I was just asking, who's working with you on this project?
So my two friends, Rian McCallig and Oisin Kerrigan, are working on this project as well.
And what did you do to get this information? Did you ask the public? Did you do a survey? What's the story?
So what we initially did was we created an in-store survey at our supermarkets.
Fantastic.
After that, we thought that we encountered bias. So we decided to create an online survey where we would have gotten more accurate responses.
And was there a big difference between the in-store survey and the sort of online survey, guys?
Well, yeah, there was some differences, as one of the questions asked if they would rather to give money to give the deposit to charity rather than them to get it. More people in the supermarkets said that they would prefer to give money to charity. And we think that that may have been slightly biased because they might want us to think, oh, we're good people, we're not bad people.
Yes, okay. And in fairness, you had a good sample size of people. 502 responded, 192 in store, 310 online. And, you know, that's a big chunk of people. So this is probably really reflective of public attitudes, guys.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen, fair play to you. So you're down in Dublin now. Are you down at the awards? And if so, what's it like?
We are, yes.
All right, brilliant stuff. Well done.
This has just come round, so we're just after our judging.
Okay, well, I have no doubt you're going to do really well. You already have. It's a fantastic study. No one else is doing it, as far as I'm aware. Fair play to you. All right, thank you very much indeed. That was the students, Ryan McCallig, Keevan Craddock and Oisin Kerrigan. I believe also now I can say a good morning to our next guests. And they are, and if you could unmute for me, girls, if you don't mind, they are Clodagh Hannigan and Katie Barr. We're using Katie's phone, so we'll say hello to her first. Katie, how are you getting on? I still can't hear you. I'll just request that I unmute you. So you should get a notification pop up on the phone there now. Can you hear me, Katie? Can I hear you? I can.
Yeah.
So, Katie, talk to me about your and Clodagh's work.
So, our project is an investigation into skin microbiomes of people who identify as highly attractive and bitten by mosquitoes and poorly attractive and not bitten by mosquitoes.
Why? And I mean that in a nice way. It's fascinating. But, Clodagh, why did you decide to go down this route?
We decided to do this because my granny gets bitten by mosquitoes and my dad doesn't, and we wanted to know why.
Are you trying to cause an argument in the family? Is it? Are you suggesting that? Are you suggesting that your dad's handsome and your granny isn't?
No.
So how did you go? Obviously, you needed more than two people for this project. So how did you go about doing the research? Because we were talking about this yesterday, and to be honest, we were all fascinated as how you were going to do this.
Well, we made agar and we swabbed. We took the plates home and swabbed some of our family and friends at home, and we got the help from the Melrose family
and
this nurse.
And Clodagh, how then, like, I mean, obviously the science is easy, right? You can find out from the samples what's gone on in terms of bites. How then do you judge whether someone's attractive or not?
If they get bitten by mosquitoes or not.
And how, dare ask, what were the findings? Are you less likely to be bitten by mosquitoes if you're good looking?
We found that your microbiomes are not significant to if you get bitten by mosquitoes or not.
All right, so in other words, mosquitoes don't care what you look like.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's a relief. But I was boasting I'd never been bitten by a mosquito, but as it turns out, it doesn't matter. Kamir, what's the experience been like down there for you guys? And all yous, have you met the judges yet?
Yeah, we've been two judging.
All right, good stuff. And what did they think of the project? How was it received?
They thought it was very good, and we put a lot of hard work into our project.
Yeah, because really, you know, the subject matter is the headline stuff, but it's the work and research that will impress the judges, isn't it? How you came to this conclusion and the innovation that you've shown and what have you.
Yeah.
All right, brilliant stuff. Listen, well done to you. Enjoy the experience. Glad you've got down safe. And we'll chat again, I am sure. That was Clodagh Hannigan and Katie Barr. They're from the Abbey Vocational School. And we also spoke there to Ryan McCallig, Keevan Craddock and Oisin Kerrigan as well. And overcoming quite convoluted information and some technical issues, but we got there. Now, Harris Service Station in Convoy, we've been asked to mention that if anyone needs milk or bread or home fuels, gas, anything, any time of night, they can deliver. They're saying don't be stuck. So if you're local to Harris Service Station Convoy, they are digging you out. And if any other businesses or individuals want us to pass on such information, we will be more than happy to do that for you. Sing songs to yourself when on the housework platform. When I'm pairing socks, I sing that beautiful song from the 70s, Reunited, and it feels so good. Peaches and Herbs. I don't know if that's a positive or a negative thing that you're sitting at home, humming. I probably do that too. Embarrassing stories, Greg. Loving these, keeping them coming, because, well, we're throwing them out to the universe, all right? We're absolving you of your embarrassment. A few of us were at the cinema quite a few years ago now. My sister and a boyfriend, now husband, were also there a few seats in front of us. After an intermission in the film, she came back in when the lights had gone off. However, there was still enough light for us to see her snuggle up to a stranger directly behind her boyfriend, asking if she'd missed anything. Of course, she hasn't been allowed to forget the incident since, and is only allowed in, I would suggest, well-lit cinemas. Love it. If you have any more of those embarrassing stories, get them into us. Greg, our firstborn, my wife needed an emergency section, and afterwards, as I left the theatre all delighted, the nurse reached around to remove my scrubs, and I mistook this as a congratulatory hug. Embarrassed much? And the nurse was unimpressed. That comes in from Eddie. Oh, so she's the arms out looking to take. But do you know what? You'd went through an awful lot of stress, Eddie. You shouldn't be embarrassed by that. Let it go. We're here to help. Any more embarrassing stories? 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. I absolutely agree that we're over-dramatising the weather. There should be no warnings unless the weather is actually severe and dangerous. I remember walking to school as a child with snow well up over the ankles, but now everything comes to a standstill with less than an inch of snow. It's bonkers, they say. What happens when we actually do get dangerously severe weather? It'll be like the boy who cried wolf. Loads of you coming in with comments in relation to that as well. Right, I believe I can say good morning now to Professor Patricia Casey, who's a consultant psychiatrist at the Mater Hospital. Patricia, or Professor Patricia Casey, thank you very much for joining us. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. And by the way, I'm not at the Mater anymore. I'm now in the Hermitage Medical Clinic.
Okie doke. That's good. But you're still doing the fantastic work that you're able to do. The headline, Ireland's mental health services are in a dire state of neglect. Why are things so bad?
It's so bad on a number of fronts. Firstly, there's the funding issue. We get 50% of the funding that we should be getting. And I say that because most countries get funding to the tune of about 10% of the total health budget for mental health. We in Ireland get 5%, 6%, between 5 and 6% of the total health budget. So we're underfunded. And the upshot of that is that we don't have enough doctors, particularly consultants and junior doctors, to treat people who need to be treated. We're short over 130 consultants in the country. And among junior doctors, we're dependent on people who are not necessarily training in psychiatry, but just doing 6 months to get experience. So they're not terribly experienced. So they're delivering the service at the coal face, as it were. And so all of that is a problem. And we don't have enough inpatient psychiatric beds. It's calculated that we have half the required beds. Most countries have double the amount of beds per million population that we have, countries like France, Canada, the UK. So we're short on all fronts, but it all stems, I think, from the funding issue.
I'm not pitching one area of health against another, but sometimes when we talk about investment in the health service, the physical health service, if I can put it like that, people get frustrated because often the investment it doesn't necessarily lead to the output that people want. It seems slightly different in the mental health services in that there's a clear pathway as to how increasing investment leads to more people being seen in a timely fashion and people being cared in a more efficient way. It seems to me an easier problem to fix with money. Do you believe there's any truth to that?
It would be an easier problem to fix with money because we would have more consultants, we would have more junior doctors who were properly, who were in full-time training and therefore more knowledgeable about psychiatry. We would have more beds for people who need to stay in hospital. Some people do need to be admitted to hospital, and most of the psychiatric patients would now be admitted to general hospitals, to psychiatric units in general hospitals. The old-fashioned mental hospitals have gone bar a few, and we don't have those services. And in addition, we don't have the full multidisciplinary teams in many of the areas in Ireland. And a multidisciplinary team in psychiatry consists of a consultant psychiatrist, the junior doctor or doctors, a clinical psychologist, a social worker, an occupational therapist, and sometimes counsellors as well. So we don't have the full range of multidisciplinary teams around the country. And all of that interferes with patient care and the speed with which we can see people who are very ill, and also the competence with which they can be dealt with. Because if you don't have bodies to treat people, if you don't have doctors and social workers and consultants to see people, you can't provide treatment for them.
Yes, I think never more so than we have in recent years, we've talked about people talking about their mental health, coming forward, make that call, reach out. And that advice stands, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, too, we also see studies which show increases in people seeking mental health services, longer waiting lists, issues with CAMHS and what have you. Yet things are worsening, but we're asking people to come forward. At the same time, too, if you look at the funding proportionately, we are funding mental health services less now than we did way, way, way back in the 1980s. So there's a serious disconnect there between the messaging, the requirements, and the actual funding. Might I add, from, and the government tell this all the time, a very rich country.
That's right. There is a disconnect between the advice, which is go and talk to somebody if you have a mental health problem, see a doctor, see a therapist. But we literally don't have the doctors who are needed to treat people with major mental illness. And they're the people that suffer. There are plenty of therapists and counsellors around for people with the milder conditions. People say who are going through a bad patch in their lives, maybe because of personal difficulties. But for people with major mental illness, there's a huge deficit and a gap in the messaging. And unfortunately, the Department of Health always deflect. And their answer to this issue that has been raised is, well, we gave 125 billion this year, and that's so many million more than last year. But it's still proportionately less than they were giving 30 years ago for mental health. And at the time that you know, mental health was being reasonably well resourced, back in the 70s and 80s, most of the treatment was offered from psychiatric hospitals. And we were told that when they closed, the money would be deflected, would be given back to psychiatry to develop the more modern services, competent services, responsive services. And instead, the money was deflected elsewhere into other specialties. And we got, so the money was stolen. Yeah. The money from the sale of psychiatric hospitals and the grounds on which they were built and subsequently were sold and made the government a lot of money, it was given to other specialties and not to psychiatry. And I think that's theft.
Yeah, a lot of people sort of listening to this who haven't been directly affected by it, it might sound like the same conversation you have about a lot of things, but we on this program will be contacting people by quite regularly in desperate situations whereby they can't get support for someone with a mental health issue. And it's having an incredible impact on the individual, but also the family and the wider family and what have you. And then also too, and I'm sure we'll be contacted by people again today, whose family members were in a desperate case and they just wanted some help and support, maybe inpatient help or whatever it might be. It didn't come, and very sadly, they ended up losing them to suicide. They'll be listening to this conversation incredibly angry, hearing about the lack of investment compared to, say, the 70s and 80s, when they have that empty chair at the table.
That's absolutely right. And child psychiatry is particularly badly affected because they have their consultant numbers are way down. There are several posts in child psychiatry that have been vacant for 3 years. And there was one particular one and they didn't even get a single applicant. I think it was one of the Kerry services about 2 years ago when they applied, when they advertised it. The HSE didn't get a single
applicant. Why is that, Professor?
Pardon?
Why is that? Is it because of the terms and conditions?
It's terms and conditions largely. And many people are now going to Australia and to Canada and to the US. But I think Australia is particularly appealing at the moment for young doctors who are coming out of training and training abroad and then choose to stay abroad. And Australia, for some reason, has very good health conditions and the weather is lovely and there's a very good work-life balance.
But I think it's very important that the public are critically thinking in that. It'd be very easy for the HSE to say, look at... You know, we have these vacancies, we've advertised those vacancies, we're really trying hard to recruit, what more can we do? They might not say the last bit, but it would be implied. But at the end of the day, dig a little bit deeper and ask, well, why are these positions not being filled? What is the reason for that? Why do people believe that the grass is very much greener on the other side, be it Australia or wherever they might go? You have to dig a little bit deeper and say, are we doing enough to be competitive? To remunerate and support people so that they can, as many of them want to, live and work in their own country?
Well, no, we're not, is the short answer. And that's why people are not applying for these positions. They will come to positions where they find they may not have a junior doctor working with them. There'll be a one-man show. Or they may not have adequate secretarial backup, or they may not have adequate social work. They may, you know, when they look at the job spec and they ring the advertisers and find out, well, you know, what facilities would be available for me, for a multidisciplinary team, for example. Mm. They're advised that there are gaps, so that's a huge problem. So these positions need to be made more attractive, and they also have very rigid consultant contracts about what consultants can do out of hours. Mm-hmm. So if a consultant wants to do 2 hours a week, patients, seeing 2 or 3 private patients, they're not allowed to. So all of these things are deterring people from applying for positions in this country.
I'm not comparing one terrible situation with another. In terms of road safety, look, we need to do absolutely everything we can to drive the numbers of deaths down on our roads. But there are way more people, and it's incredibly underreported, that die by suicide, as an example, every single year. The government and the media love to talk about road safety and what can we do, and we'll reduce these speed limits and the RSA is going to be split in two and more money's going to be spent here, there and everywhere. But why don't we have the same sort of coverage and open conversations and solution-led conversations when dealing with mental health to try and tackle the scourge of suicide and self-harm in this country? Is it because it's too complicated? It's not sexy enough? Why?
Well, suicide is a bit of an exception in that the government has actually, and I'm not one to praise the government or the HSE generally.
Go ahead, though.
But on this in this instance, I have to say they have done good work. They have established a national program about 5 or 6 years ago, whereby every emergency department in every general hospital in Ireland has a fully trained, highly trained clinical nurse specialist who sees everybody who comes in with self-harm and suicidal ideation. They're all seen as an emergency by that person.
My experience of that is not as such up here. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not contradicting or trying to diminish your praise, but we don't even have figures on suicides. I mean, that's something the coroners...
We do.
I know you're the expert in this area, but the coroners currently are working to actually try and tidy up the system whereby we have actual figures that reflect the level of suicide. I know that because Dr. Dennis McCauley, our local coroner, is actively working in that area.
Well, maybe some suicides don't come to attention. I'd be very surprised if they didn't. But the indications are that the suicide rate in Ireland for the last 4 or 5 years has actually been dropping, as it has throughout Europe, in fact. Right. And it's thought that it may well be linked to this new service that is up and running, whereby people are identified early and put on a care pathway. But of course, the care pathway might break down if there aren't any doctors to see them.
I get you, Patricia. And about your authority in this area, by the way, I hope you don't think I'm being argumentative or contradictory.
No, not at all.
I appreciate it. And the point still stands. It comes from you, a top consultant. the state of the mental health service, whilst there are some improvements in some areas, is in a dire state of neglect. And I hope you don't believe, I hope I didn't come across as disrespectful. It certainly wouldn't be my intention. Thanks for your time today, and we hope to speak again. Have a lovely day.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's our pleasure. Thank you so very much indeed. As I say, I'm not contradicting the professor. It's just that my experience of covering that issue, certainly in this part of the world, is a little bit different. To that effect, actually, a contact from a listener here. We have a 24-hour emergency service at Letterkenny University Hospital for people with physical conditions. We do not have a 24-hour service for mental health in Letterkenny, though Professor Casey suggested that every hospital has someone on duty, and anyone who presents with severe mental health issues is treated. That's what I heard there from the professor. My experience is that people are getting sent home and from hospitals. But anyway, this caller also believes there should be services for physical and mental health services for all. Mental health should not be discriminated against. That's their view. One on the hospice before we take a break. I know the hospice very well. My husband and myself, Paddy O'Grady, God rest his soul, and four others walked to raise money for the Foyle Hospice. We pushed a wheelbarrow, which my husband had made, from Donegal to Derry on a walk. The walk took 4 days. We collected €8,000 in total, and that comes in from Madge O'Grady. Madge, a lovely memory to have. Very sorry that you lost your husband, Paddy, but I'm sure you've got wonderful, happy memories, and I'm sure there was plenty of happy memories on that walk, which produced €8,000 that you can reflect on. And we're thinking on you too as well. Right, we'll be back after a short break. Okay, we're joined on the programme now by Mary Hart, the wife of Jimmy Hart, the former senator, of course. Mary, thanks for your time today. Good morning to you.
No problem. Morning to you.
Thank you very much for joining us on the show today. And we're speaking in the context of recent figures that show almost 1,300 people aged just 20 to 65 are in nursing homes, this due to a lack of community services. So how has this affected your family, Mary, and why did that statistic resonate with you?
Well, I think people probably know, a lot of people would have known Jimmy's story because it was well probably covered at the time. He had a traumatic brain injury after a fall in Dublin, went through the usual St. James's, Beaumont, National Rehabilitation Hospital, Letterkenny Medical, Royal Hospital, you name it, he was through it. And we worked, and all we wanted was for him to, initially for him to live when he was in Beaumont, because he was in ICU and intubated. But then when he came home, I wanted him to live well, if you know what I mean. So he was at home with me. He was in the hospital initially, medical rehab, and they worked their wee socks off in there in physiotherapy, trying to get him back on his feet again, which we did, and supported by myself back home. We had some home help. That was grand. But what happens then is when he arrived home, there's this lack of community-based rehabilitation, especially neuro rehabilitation needed, especially for people with traumatic brain injuries of any kind. Now, that could include ABA, that Jimmy's an acquired brain injury, but there's also, you know, you've got Parkinson's, you've got MS, you've got all of those different, you know, whether it's epilepsy, doesn't matter. You need community-based rehabilitation, proper community-based rehabilitation.
So do you find that...
And that would include things like...
Sorry, you can answer probably lead on to that in answering this question. Does that mean really, you know, progress that you might see stalls all those regression then once a patient, or Jimmy in this case, comes home, which is actually really hard to do with, I'm sure, as a loved one and as a caregiver, Mary?
He had progressed when he came home, but I had worked extremely hard with him. And anybody that knows me knows that I would. I had worked in community-based rehabilitation myself, albeit for mental health. And we used to say that mental health was the poor cousin of the disability services. Well, I'll tell you what, if mental health is the poor cousin, acquired brain injury is the poor cousin once removed.
Yeah.
Because the lack of physiotherapy, speech and language, neuropsychology, occupational therapy, social for Jimmy, because he loved talking to people. I mean, as I described it to somebody recently, I said, do you know what it's like? I said, navigating this system, and I worked in it, navigating the system, it was like a pin. I can only describe it like a pinball machine, Greg. So Jimmy's the ball, and I'm the lever. You know, you used to pull the lever and the ball would ping off all the different elements. Well, I'm pulling the lever, and Jimmy, I'm praying, will collide with some of the different health and social elements needed that are in the pinball machine. you know, before you fall down the drain. You remember the ball then used to fall down the drain?
Yeah, you're just trying to keep it in play.
And that's what it's like. But and some of the elements are there and some of them aren't there. And some of them are partially there. Mm. It's hit and miss, you know, and it depends on your geography too. But the resources are not there to support community-based rehabilitation services. And the point I'm trying to make is, why on God's earth would you pump resources and energy and the work that people did in those traumatic trauma centres? So he went in the door, he was dealt with professionally, you come out the back door, you come home, and then at local level, we don't have the community-based rehabilitation that's required. Mm. We're saying it for years, we still don't have it. And Jimmy's potential, I keep saying, his potential was, like, he was writing for a local newspaper, he was walking unaided. And I'm like, his potential was lost, not because of the brain injury, but because of the lack of community neuro rehabilitation services in this county.
Very hard,
and
to,
that's a fact.
Very hard to observe that happening, Mary, I'm sure, from your perspective.
It's cruel. It's not even hard, it's cruel, because so much energy was put into it, and it is completely lost. Now, granted, Jimmy ended up in a nursing home because he deteriorated on his health, which can happen with ABA. Like, it could have been episodic. I don't know. Mm. It must have been, because he's actually quite well now, especially cognitively. Emotionally, he's fine. Physically, totally compromised now. Not gone. He still has power in his legs. Mm. But and his behaviour is, it's okay, but it can be triggered occasionally. So you need to keep an eye on that, what's triggering it. And but you need specialised services. You can't put somebody in a nursing home and expect them to be specialised in acquired brain injury therapy.
His transfer to a nursing home was because of deteriorating health.
His mental health had deteriorated in that he was having chronic panic attacks and so on.
Okay.
Of course, mental health services think, oh, well, no, it's acquired brain injury. That's more, you know, that doesn't fit into our category. So you don't really fit into any particular category, because you fit into every category, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I got you.
Whether it's intellectual, whether it's emotional, whether it's physically compromised, whether it's mental health, it's all of those things. It's not just one or other. So that's why the community-based rehabilitation has to be multidisciplinary.
But Jimmy's now in a nursing home, Mary. If the supports in the community that should be there were there, would he still be at home?
No. Right. Oh, 100%. 100%. I've absolutely no doubt about that. And as I said, the potential wasn't lost because of the brain injury. We recovered from the brain injury, albeit never at 100%. It's never going to be. But because of the lack of community neuro rehab services, proper community neuro rehab services. Don't waste the money pumping it into the trauma centres like the Bowman's that are all required, by the way, save lives. But why pump it in when you then abandon them? Like, it makes absolutely no sense. Absolutely none. And I am calling on whoever the new Minister for Health will be, whenever the government is formed, which according to Micheál will be before the 22nd of March or January, hopefully. If they are, whoever he or she is in the Minister of Health, I am calling on you to please look not just at the trauma centres, but underpin them with proper community-based rehabilitation services, which include all of those things like physiotherapy, speech and language, neuropsychology, occupational therapy, social, and more social. And put the resources where they're required. Do not waste it going in the front door of a trauma centre. Mm. And then they go out the back door to go home and there's nothing. Really and truly. It makes absolutely no economic sense whatsoever. Never mind, you know, any moral sense to do that to a human being.
The rehabilitative services you talk of, there are obviously gaps here. Are there other areas of the country that are getting it right? Like, is this a national issue or a HSE area issue? I'm just curious if it's across the board or particular gaps here.
Well, I think what they've done recently is there is a national trauma strategy, and I'd say they're probably trying out things maybe at different levels. Maybe you'll probably get Cork, Galway, Dublin, you can be sure. You know what I mean? But really and truly, it is geographically, this is a problem at national level. And make no mistake about it, it's just not there. You talk to the Acquired Brain Injury Service, who are here in Letterkenny, and a very good service they provide. But, I mean, they have a little bungalow that holds, there's five beds in it. I mean, seriously, if you look at Donegal, look at the number of head traumas, even as a result of car accidents in County Donegal with young people. I've met those people in rehabilitation in Letterkenny Hospital. I mean, and I'm looking at them thinking, oh, and I know another lovely young boy that I know and love dearly, who is now in hospital and just starting the journey Jimmy started on 10, 11 years ago. And I'm thinking, oh my God, please let it be better for him.
Mary,
let it be better for him.
Jimmy's just 66. He remains in a nursing home. He remains far behind his potential with the right services and supports. What is the future then? I mean, you know, do you see a pathway to him maximising his potential with his condition? Do you see a pathway out of a nursing home where he can be in a different setting, even at home, with the supports that you talk of? Like, what does the future hold for you? I know what you're calling for, but what do you think will happen?
I know, but you have to remember now, when Jimmy was living at home, at least he was mobile. Now he's not even mobile. So it's the weight. I am now 66 years of age in June. With not a great back, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I have problems with it. So physically, even getting Jimmy from A to B now is much more difficult than it was when I had him at home.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's only somebody sent me a video, 2018, and he was in the house in Rafoe. I got him into the home in Rafoe, and he was walking unaided.
Wow.
My son Michael was standing in the background with two little crutches.
Yeah.
And Jimmy was walking unaided in the kitchen floor, and I thought, oh my God, look how far he had come. Mm. And I look now and I think, oh my God, this is immoral.
Yeah.
And not only is it economically makes absolutely no sense, but morally it really is an awful stain on this country. It really is. And we're saying it for a long, long, long time.
Okay.
It's time. We have newly elected TDs in this country. We have five wannabe senators. Get the finger out. Use your levers of power when you're up there, and please ensure that Donegal, in particular, and the rest of the country, fabulous, but Donegal, we want our own community-based rehabilitation service.
Okay, Mary
Hart. Funded properly.
Thank you very much for your time. Will you pass on our best wishes to former Senator Jimmy Hart? Always enjoyed engaging with him, and I wish him nothing but the best.
I know. He's still engaged with you. He would still engage with you.
No problem. Thanks so much, Mary. God bless you. Take care. That's Mary Hart, wife of former Senator Jimmy Hart. Hi, Greg. The whole reason we're not in an orange warning when I believe, same as yourself and plenty more, is Donegal is not of concern to the Dublin media. Simple. As are many civil servants, hospitals, etc., are not aware of how to spell out Donegal. Greg, some of the stats on the deposit refund scheme have to be down to businesses serving cans, example, in a caf, and the customer doesn't take them home. I doubt the business owner takes them to the recycling either. This has crossed my mind a number of times. Well, maybe there's some cafe owners who will let us know what the story is. Please tell people to keep quads from messing on the roads. We're paying for tax and insurance for what? So these people can wreak havoc on our roads, says the listener. Tell that woman to take one of her own to the ED and see how good she gets on with mental health services. Another, I think it's ridiculous that Michael O'Leary should be allowed back in the Dáil. He was kicked out of the party years ago and shouldn't be allowed to have an insight into politics. He's a kingmaker now, it would seem. The roads are bad in the Clonmany area, says a listener. My husband's home help can't come in to him, which is why, you know, maybe that's why we need these... warnings. Regarding testing vehicles, I have a small van and it costs double the amount to test it than some cars that are bigger. Why does my van cost more to test? Asks a listener. Listen, we've loads of comments that we didn't get to. Thanks so much for taking the time. It's greatly appreciated. I will, of course, include them on tomorrow's show. And it's a busy show as well. We've got our Friday panel where we introduce three guests to you to debate the big issues of the day and the week. So stay tuned for that. We really love your involvement in that hour and are introducing more of your comments and what have you as well. That's entertainment between 11 and 12 and loads of other stuff in between. But for me, Greg Hughes and Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show, and Shannon Wilkins, who works in our IT, supporting Caroline as well, have a great Thursday. Stay safe out there and stay tuned.